UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was anybody at above us to pass us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. See, I passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And a dispatch.
Okay.
Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
Four calls?
Four calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome to the show, everyone, wherever in the world you are joining us from tonight. Tonight's guest is Ali, calling from the state of Colorado. She has a few experiences to share with us tonight that appear paranormal in nature, and one such notable event that impacted her the most occurred on a state-to-state trip in 1994 while visiting national monuments dedicated to Native American history. But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find the link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the show, Ali.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Nick.
Calling from Denver, Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where I'm at.
And you're going to be sharing several experiences today for our listeners.
I am, yes. I hope everybody's in for a ride.
You've been a listener for the past month, says here.
Yeah, so more over than a month now. I came across your podcast because I had I've had several strange experiences. And one that recently occurred with me was I went on a trip to the sand dunes, the Great Sand Dunes here in Colorado. It's a beautiful place. But they have a place called the UFO Watchtower in Cooperville.
Oh, yeah.
Colorado. Yeah. And, on this, it was during Labor Day and, I just decided that, I was going to not take those 3 days for granted and I was going to make the trek out there and finally check it out. I had seen the woman who owns it, Judy. I had seen her on a Vice, small video that Vice had created 5 years ago when I was living in California and, became really interested. And I decided that it was a great time to go, before all of what's happening is currently happening. And so I went out there and I spent one night out there and it was a really clear night. You could see the stars really vividly, and in my experience there, I went into the gift shop and it's a dome-shaped gift shop. It's really cool. It's very eccentric. I came across a conversation that she was having with another patron who was there in the shop. And they were discussing some of the artwork from people who have had experiences or experiencers. You know, they were, you know, the communication was between the two of them. And I didn't interject. But at some point, this woman came over to me and she said, "Oh, are you deciding to stay here this evening?" And I said, "Yeah, I think I'm going to stay here one night, you know, my partner and I." She said, "Well, if you're interested, you know, later this evening, my partner and I, we're going to be here. We're going to be doing a meditation in the center of the campsite if you're interested in joining us." And I'm the kind of person who leaves it to fate. If somebody, you know, I pick and choose what I decide I'm going to do. And I try not to be too reserved. That's my general instinct, is to be maybe a little bit more offstandish, maybe more self-guarded. But in this circumstance, I decided that I would relent and go with it. So she came up to our campsite that evening and started, you know, to talk to me about it once again. And I went into a little bit more of a descriptive, you know, what her idea was. And she was talking about a man named Stephen Greer. And he does these walkthrough meditations with some ambient sound, I believe. And so I looked at my partner and I said, "What do you think?" And she said, "Okay, let's do it. Why not?" So we did. And it was interesting. I don't believe I saw anything. I think I saw some satellites. And, you know, I saw a few things that looked like they were in the trajectory of which a satellite would cross paths. It didn't look bizarre or unique or different to me. But I left with this sense of awe, and I really appreciated that moment with this person and her partner. And so that evening was pretty normal. You know, we left that day and we decided that we were going to go stay at another campsite closer to the sand dunes, because our plan was to end the 3-day weekend staying at the Great Sand Dunes. And that evening we were just talking about it a little bit, and you know, I was looking out at the sky, you know, just mesmerized by the view. The view was clear. You could see, you can see so far out, and I was just impressed with this view, you know. And it was a pretty casual evening. We had some dinner and then we called it a night fairly early, around 11:30. And then that evening I had a dream, and in this dream I remembered my partner and I. In this dream we were sitting in the tent with our knees against our chest, and our dogs were looking out. And I looked out the tent in my dream and I see this silver sphere looking in. The next morning when I woke up, I told my partner about this dream, and she said, "Well, that's strange." The stranger part about it was that I had, I have a sleep analysis, on my phone, you know, to track my sleep and, see how I'm doing, you know, with my, I sometimes have insomnia, and it can last for a few months at a time. And I try really diligently to be aware of that, you know? So I set my time at such where I'm getting at least 6 to 7 hours of sleep in a night uninterrupted. And it was really quiet out there. I do remember that it was very quiet. You know, there wasn't a wind. So, you know, I thought that was a very strange dream. I looked at my sleep tracker that following morning, and it only registered that I had slept an hour. And I thought, that's bizarre, you know, to have such a strange dream. And, you know, my sleep tracker is very consistent. It shows me every little movement that I make throughout the evening, and that it only registered 1 hour. So that was bizarre. But other than that, nothing else. But I mean, you know, my experience growing up was that my mom was a believer. She had many experiences, she said. When I was growing up, she wasn't abashed to share her experiences. She's very candid about them. And, you know, when I was very young, I had a great fear of, you know, extraterrestrial life, you know, the idea that something outside of, you know, a sentient life form on this earth could exist was just far beyond me. I couldn't even wrap my head around it. But, you know, I was born in 1983, you know, around the age of, I believe, nine or eight, the movie with Travis Scott, Fire in the Sky, came out, and she decided to take me, you know. And my mom was very young and you know, definitely naive. I don't think that she really thought of those things at the time. And, you know, I just remember watching this movie and thinking, wow, this is beyond me, you know. But she had told me of experiences that she had. And when I was very young, there were a lot of events that to this day I can't begin to explain that happened with her. And one of those experiences was when I was six. She had moved us into a bungalow, and it was located in the East Bay. This is California, in Short Acres, California, close to Pittsburgh. So it's considered definitely a rough area, you know, but at the time it was still, I think, a naive time in a lot of people's lives where, you know, they let their kids play outside. There just wasn't as much fear back then as there is now. And that was in 1989. It was the same year that we had the massive earthquake hit San Francisco. And in this home in particular, a lot of strange events occurred. I have very vivid memories of these events because they were so startling and quite frankly, very scary. Some of these events came down to me, you know, being beside my mother, and her bedroom was right next to mine. And in one evening in particular, it was about a week or two after we had moved in, and she had put me to bed and she decided to take a shower. She shut the door to my bedroom. And when she came out, the door was ajar. And so she peeked in, and this is her account. She peeked in and, you know, told me to go to bed. She thought that I had opened the door and, you know, that I was maybe goofing around. And after she didn't hear anything from me, she closed the door again. She went into her room. You know, she was getting ready for bed herself. She heard the door open. And of course, you know, she thought it was me. And she came back in and said, "Alicia, just, you knock it off, you know, go to bed." You know, and came over to where I was sleeping and noticed that I was sound asleep. And that really freaked her out. She decided to shut the door again, thinking that maybe I was just joking around. And when she went back into her room, not more than a few seconds later, the door slammed violently open. And she swears up and down that what had happened, she heard somebody say, "Get out." So that was one of the first accounts in this home that we had shared. And then they would become more prevalent over time. And she was in a very abusive relationship with this man. You know, she was associated with a motorcycle gang. I won't mention the name, but so was this man. And he would quite frequently go on these motorcycle tours, and so would she. So I would spend half the time there and half the time living with my grandmother. But, you know, they would get into volatile fights, so much so, you know, screaming matches, all sorts of negative situations that a young child shouldn't be in. And, you know, unbeknownst to me, that was pretty normal. But, you know, on these events, when they would occur, the lights would flicker, the TV would turn on and off, you know, it would go to static and white noise. We had a pit bull, and this pit bull quite frequently would look at a very specific corner of the home in the living room and growl. You know, there were events where she and, you know, her husband at the time were having a house party, even though, you know, it was not so much. It was just probably a rager, more likely, but, you know, a rough crowd. And this dog was staring at that corner. I remember sitting on the couch. You know, her husband at the time was sitting in a chair right next to the dog. And that dog yelped so loud and jumped right into his lap, shaking. You know, we came home once after my mother had taken me to the store. We had a bathroom, and it was just, a two-bedroom, one bath, very small home. And she had cleaned. She was a meticulous cleaner. And she cleaned this bathroom. And I remember her saying, "Okay, let's go to the store, get some groceries." And we came back and the door was closed to the bathroom. And when she opened the door, there was millions of little fruit flies, small gnats, just dead in the bathroom, just in the bathroom. And that really spooked her. It really spooked me. You know, there was an event where things would come into the house. You know, and it was really common for us to keep the doors and the windows open during the summer, you know, because it was a very hot and humid area. The East Bay is, and it can be. And as soon as, you know, say bees or flies or, you know, we even had rodents at times. And there were many events where as soon as they would come into the house, they would die, you know, right away. And that always freaked my mom out. We had some plates fly out of the cupboards once. And, you know, at this point, I was so very young. And my mom, I think that, you know, I don't really know what her experiences were. I do know that she talks about them. There's almost a part of me that thinks that it may be related. You know, hypothetically, I don't know if it were a poltergeist or, you know, if you believe in entities. And of that nature, that was a weird event, you know, and I still to this day can't explain that event. And it was the first and last time I really had anything like that supernatural occur in my life. And up until that point, you know, after this event, you know, being so young and, you know, maybe I'd stay there for a year or so with her until, you know, she released me to my grandmother, and my grandmother quite frequently took care of me, my mom being so young, and, you know, she liked to party and go out quite often. So, you know, I had known that my mom had a daughter a year after I was born. She decided, and it was not with the same father that I have it, you know, she decided to give her up for adoption. And because of her illicit use of alcohol and drugs, you know, I think that it was maybe too much for her to bear, and she couldn't really bear me. And so I think that she thought that would probably be the best case scenario for my sister. And so as time went on, you know, I had not many visits. They were very infrequent. You know, I would go maybe out of the, up until I was 15, maybe out of that time frame, I had maybe had visited with her about a handful of times with the family who would come to adopt her. And they had some pretty radical belief systems in place. And, you know, it was like more of like an, what is the saying, you know, they kind of held authority like an iron rod, you know, and I just, I didn't really understand that, you know, and I kind of grew up like a feral cat, you know, where there wasn't a lot of authoritarian ideations in my home. You know, I think that kids were kids and, you know, we would stay out until lights came on. So the ideals were very different and very hard for me to understand and really uncomfortable. So my grandmother, around the time that I had turned 11 or 12, got a call from my sister's adopted mother asking if I would like to go on, you know, kind of a journey to understand my Native American ancestry. My grandfather is Chiricahua Apache, you know, he's full-blooded, and he met my grandmother, and, you know, my mother was born in 1964. You know, it was more of like a love affair. It wasn't serious. And he went back to his reservation. So I never got to meet the man myself, but I have photos and I know, you know, of my ancestry and I know where I come from, but, you know, I don't, you know, I have never been a part of a reservation myself. You know, my mother, you know, she had a lot of feelings about it. She felt as though her father had denounced her. And that being said, you know, I didn't know, I knew enough, but I didn't know much. And I think this woman thought she could come in and kind of help us understand this part of our history, you know, and this sounds so funny, but it's almost like, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, I think there was a huge fascination with a lot of, you know, Anglo-Saxon people, you know, with Native American ancestry. I think it was a fad for some. You know, I think this woman kind of latched onto this idea and really ran with it. So she took us to six different states, you know, in the span of 6 weeks. So every week we would stay in a different state. You know, she went about her journey with us, this venture, and it was quite fascinating. I will say, you know, I got to see a lot of things that otherwise, you know, coming from the economic status that we were at, which wasn't the greatest, you know, I probably wouldn't have had the chance to ever see at that age. To this day, you know, out of all those accumulative memories in that time frame, this is the one memory that eclipses all of the other memories, you know, outside of going to the petrified forest, you know, outside of the powwows we went to. She took us to Sedona, Arizona, and it's very vast, you know, and at the time in the 90s, there was a lot of roads that are accessible now to the general public that were then, but, she was in close contact with a lot of other people who were affiliated or associated with her church and had gotten in touch with a family who had lived out in a very remote area of Sedona. I remember the drive it had to have taken about a half an hour to an hour to get into this place, which wasn't even on a, you know, a path. It was man-made, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't cemented or, you know, it wasn't a gravel path. It was literally just concaved into the dirt, like with over time, you know, people coming in and out, thinking how strange it looked. It looked very, Martian to me. You know, I mean, it was nothing I had seen being inner city, growing up in an urban environment. You know, when we got there, you know, we were introduced to several people in a trailer-style home. And the trailer-style home was very small. You know, it housed, I think, about five people. And I think the place was no more than three bedrooms. So, you know, this woman who had adopted my sister was fairly large, and she had back issues. My sister and I were very small at that point, you know, we were caravanning in a van. It was like one of those, you know, old school 90s vans that you would see. And, you know, you're going to see a bunch of kids in there coming from soccer practice. I don't know the make or model of it. Yeah. So she decided that she would stay in the trailer with these people and we would stay out in the van that evening. And, you know, we got to meet a few other people off to the side. You know, there was another trailer. It was small and, you know, it had another family in there. And I just remember thinking, wow, this is so bizarre and very out of my comfort zone. You know, I was very out of my safety, you know, net, my family. And I just felt very foreign and, you know, and so young. And I think at that time I was very shy and I didn't really open up or talk to a lot of people. So, you know, just being around the table with all of these adults, you know, they're talking about how they've had some recent encounters with mountain lions out there. And I just thought that was so bizarre, you know, and I just remember being entranced with this notion that there were mountain lions out there in this vast desert. I thought it was so strange. And I was like, that is the weirdest thing. And, you know, I didn't really speak up much. And, you know, one of the people said, yeah, they can scream like women in, you know, in pain. And I just, you know, and of course I'm thinking of all the horrifying 80s, 90s movies that I had seen, you know, like Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, Michael and all that jazz, you know, like being a kid, you know, we weren't really watched over very well. And, I was like, this is terrifying, you know, but, I didn't say much, you know, and the night came and, you know, we got into the van and she locked the doors and told us good night. And, you know, I was reading a book, with one of those little clip-on lights and I was having a hard time falling asleep. I remember looking at the clock, and thinking, wow, it's, you know, this is going to be a long night. And being a kid, you know, that young, you just, every kind of fear could come into your brain. But, you know, my sister, she slept pretty soundly. She fell asleep pretty quickly after we had been told to go to bed. Finally, I drifted off at some point around, I want to say 11:30, 12. I want to say that was probably around the time that I fell asleep. And then I woke up and I just remember thinking, well, it's really quiet out here, just like that dream, you know, when I was in the Great Sand Dunes, it was so quiet. And, I looked out and I was afraid to look out. We had these blinds, you know, these, I don't know, these blinds that she had fashioned to cover the windows. I opened it just to peek, to look out. You know, I looked out and I think it was about 200 yards, not very far at all. There appeared this light and this light was stationary and it was bright. And at first my thought, because you know, I'm from an urban environment, I'm used to street lights. I was like, that's a street light. You know, that was my first conclusion that, you know, as a kid, that's probably what most kids would think, you know, and your brain doesn't know how to register it, you know? And I just kept looking at it. And then I see another one and then I see another one and they're all moving at a very slow rate and they're all very bright and they seem very close. And, I was mesmerized. I didn't really know what to do. My heart was racing. You know, and I had already known that there this possibility of extraterrestrial life form, you know, handed down to my mother. I was like, oh no, that's aliens. That's, you know, and you know, in hindsight, you know, that memory still haunts me. It's not, you know, I have shared it with a handful of people, not many. And the reaction's always the same. Like they're like, well, how do you know? I don't know. But I can tell you that it happened two nights in a row. And the second night was a little different from the first. But I just remember trying to go to sleep. You know, I was just telling myself, go to sleep, go to sleep. You know, I closed my eyes. I did the old-fashioned put the blanket over your head move. You know, I wasn't breathing. was holding my breath, and I looked out for maybe about, couldn't have been longer than maybe 2 or 3 minutes, you know, before I got real spooked. And the second night it happened again. And the second night I was prepared. I was like, something's going to happen. Trying to explain that when you're a kid is impossible. I mean, you know, you're looked at as, you know, by most adults, they're going to look at you and be like, you're making it up. You know, you're not, you don't know what you're talking about. And whatever you saw, what you think you saw isn't what you saw, you know? And I think that a lot of things were explained away when I was a kid. The only person that I ever came to know who believed in any type of, you know, entity life form was my mom. And for good reason, we both had an experience together. And I don't know what her experience was when she was young, but she believed wholeheartedly, that she had seen something, you know, and I carry that with me. And I know that I've heard this before. I've heard from other accounts over the past that, you know, lineage is a huge thing. And I don't know what that means either. I do know that, you know, depending on your lineage or, you know, what you know, if you have an experiencer in your family, then you may have the chance of being an experiencer yourself. I've heard that before. You know, I heard it can be linked to something like that or to that degree. But who's to say? You know, so I don't know to this day. I really don't. And I think that, when I think back on that time, it's still a very vivid image in my brain. I do know that. And I do know what we did the next day. And I was still very entranced and I was very stoic and very quiet and more so than usual. I was a very quiet kid, but, you know, we were to go out to a site and it was a site we shouldn't have never been on that site because it was an archaeological dig site, you know, and they were, that site was specifically a Native American, dig site, you know, for, artifacts. And, you know, I took pottery, I found an arrowhead, they found stuff. And I remember thinking, you know, in my child mind, this is wrong. I shouldn't be taking this stuff, you know, even then. And this woman's telling me, no, it's fine. You know, you share this bloodline and I think it belongs to you. And I kept thinking, I don't think it does, you know, like, I don't think I should be taking, I felt so incredibly guilt ridden over taking this stuff and feeling like there was something attached to it. I shouldn't do it. You know, that was like the day that we had left and that was the thing that we had done. And man, you know, I felt so much guilt, you know, that after that experience, you know, we went to 2 more states. And, you know, and after I got home, you know, my grandmother asked me, how was my trip? I didn't, you know, I was too afraid to tell her what I had seen, you know, but I did tell her that we had gone to this, Native American dig site, you know, and that I showed her what I had found. And she didn't seem to, you know, like me, she could care less. I think that she was just ecstatic that I got to do something that otherwise she wouldn't have had the ability to do for me financially. And, I remember telling her, I said, I'm going to go take it to this, local museum. When it was a museum in downtown Antioch, and it housed a little bit of everything, you know, and anything that anybody had that was of, maybe an antiquity or, you know, an artifact or, you know, it housed a little bit of everything. I just remember taking it there and saying, I'd like to drop this off. And the woman looking at me and saying, are you sure? You know? And I said, yeah. She said, well, you could put this on a necklace. I said, I don't want to, you know, I didn't want anything to do with it. I just, for some reason, there was a nagging feeling that I had about it. And that wasn't too far away from where I saw those lights. So there's a lot of weird coincidences that have happened in my life, you know, and I'm always looking to the sky, you know, but I think that was the only experience that I've had thus far in my life that I can say for certain was something not of this planet. Couldn't have been, you know, I mean, what, you know, looking out there in the light of day, absolutely nothing in the sky. There was no planes out there. You know, it wasn't a spot where you would see anything in the sky, you know, because it was so desolate. There were no lights and
intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
So to this day, I wanted to share that with you because, you know, I listen to your podcast and, you know, it's nice to hear other people's accounts and know that I'm not alone in that feeling, you know, knowing that I've seen something that I can't explain, but knowing that it's not of this planet. It's not of Earth, you know. So thank you for that.
You know, you're not going to be met with extreme skepticism on this show. You know, you're going to be listened to by thousands of like-minded people. And it also seems that this light was kind of there for you. It was wanting to be seen by you.
You know, I don't know. I sometimes, like I said, you know, I've had what most people would probably call paranormal experiences. I had one when I was young. You know, most recently when I went to the sand dunes, that dream. And I've had other dreams and other experiences, you know, like a, recently I had a medical scare, you know, and that was over this week, you know, and I'm really healthy. I'm, you know, I don't drink, I don't smoke. I take really good care of myself because of my family, history, you know, with alcoholism and drug abuse. And I've had my fair share of, mistakes, you know, I've made a lot of mistakes, and I know at this point, you know, I would be running out of time and I'd be taking too many chances. And there was a chance when I had been under the influence many a time and gotten behind the wheel and wasn't pulled over. You know, I never got a DUI. I'm very grateful because, you know, you can't play with chance like that. You just can't. You can't play God or, you know, whatever a spiritual entity that anybody believes in. You can't play with fate, I suppose you'd say. There was one night that really spooked me, and that was really shortly after I decided to get sober. And that was, I was getting off a shift, and, you know, this brings me to a story that, you know, when I'm thinking about all this, it, you know, I was getting off a shift. I hadn't had anything to drink. You know, I went to a bar to meet someone, at the time that I was dating, and, you know, I had about a half of a drink, you know, and it was hard liquor, but it was only half. And at this point, my tolerance was pretty high, you know, and I decided, no, you know, I'm not going to drink that much. I got to get home. You know, I was going to work a double the next day, and I really wasn't thinking I wanted to do that to myself. So, you know, I decided that I was going to drive, and, you know, my home from the bar or where we were at was only about 3 miles away, not far at all. You know, I don't remember, but I was going down, you know, the road, and I was only about a mile and a half away from my home. And then I woke up, and this was around 11:30 in the evening. Again, I don't know what that is. It always happens around that time of night where things have occurred. But, you know, I came to, and I was all the way in another area that was about 40 minutes away from my home in a dirt field with this person. And she's looking at me saying, how the hell did we get here? And I said, I don't know. Not a scratch, not a dent on the car. But I just came to in this clearing out in the middle of nowhere, you know, like in it. And when I think about it now, because I, you know, a week later after being really spooked by this experience, I went out there and I said, how the hell did I get out here without, I don't know, crashing, something happening to me? Who knows? Absolutely. I have no idea. It was like almost like I was in a trance. Like, I don't remember how I got out there at all. You know, I still rack my brain to this day about how that could have happened. I couldn't tell you how that happened at all. Absolutely not. But I got sober after that, and I've stayed sober since. Can't really say it was the drink, but I, you know, who's to say? But it was, I didn't drink all of it. I do know, and I do remember that. I decided that night, I was like, no, I can't drink, you know, too much because I got to work in the morning. I had to get up pretty early. I had to be at work by 7 in the morning. So I just wasn't, you know, wanting to get up with a hangover or anything like that. But you know, to end up only a mile and a half away from your home, to then in turn end up about 40 minutes away in a whole other county, I can't explain that. You know, like I can't explain how I got out in that field. That's never happened to me before, and it hasn't happened to me since. So I don't know. But yeah, that night I decided, you know, most nights, you know, I would just take a, you know, take a transportation, paid transportation home. You know, if I decided I was going to drink a lot, you know, and at that time I was, drinking to excess, you know, I was having at least, 3 or 4 drinks, every day, you know, like, you know, during the evening, and for some reason that night I decided not to, and that was the scariest night of my life, you know, out of all the nights that I could have put myself in harm's way, with my drinking, that was one night I decided not to, and I ended up out in that field, and I just can't explain that. That was the scariest part. When I woke up, I was really confused. I looked out. I couldn't wrap my head around where I was. You know, I had my hands resting on my thighs in a downward position, you know, so my hands were resting on my thighs. I remember that. My head was tilted back, and that's when I came to. And I remember feeling, I didn't feel nauseated, but I did feel I had a headache. You know, I felt like I had a pretty severe headache, like almost felt like a migraine. My vision was blurred, but it quickly came to. And then we called somebody and she came to pick us up, you know, and that was it. And the person I was with, you know, and, you know, I'm trying to be as vague about who and where, because, you know, just to be anonymous, I don't want to put their information out there. You know, but she doesn't recall, and it spooked her too, you know, and she hadn't had that much to drink either. And she just was terrified. She said, how do we get out here? She's asking me, like, I know, because I was the driver. And I said, I can't tell you. You know, she was in hysterics. And I was just trying to wrap my head around how we got there and why I felt that way, though I was clear-headed when I started to drive home.
And there was no damage to the car whatsoever?
None. The car was in complete tact, and the tires were, you know, in great shape. I didn't take the time, because I was so confused, to look at how we drove into this clearing, because we were in there, you know, I mean, we had to go, you know, the road was raised like a levee, you know, when there's water and, you know, so it runs off. I don't know how we made that dip down into this clearing, you know, and didn't get stuck. Or, you know, this was like a Honda CRV, you know, God, probably in 96 Honda CRV. So to this day, I don't know how we got all the way out there. I didn't look at tire tracks. I didn't think to look, you know, but, it was freshly tilled. I do know that. I remember there being the tilling lines in the field. You can see those. There was nothing out there. And then off to the distance, you can see a freeway. Yeah, that was a bizarre event. You know, those are basically the accounts that I've had. You know, I couldn't tell you anything else outside of, those are some of the weird anomalies that have occurred in my life. Those are the ones that I can't explain or even begin to understand or wrap my head around still.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing them today for us, Allie.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me on your show. I love listening to everybody and hearing what they have to say. You know, there's been people that I've heard on your show that have really made me feel at ease, you know, with some of my experiences, like, oh, I'm not alone in this. I, you know, somebody else has been through this experience too.
And you shouldn't feel alone. A lot of people have these experiences all over the world, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And with your show, I've heard a lot more accounts outside of what I sometimes, you know, have seen on, you know, documentaries or, you know, TV. I think that hearing these individuals and their experiences, there was a man you had on who was from, I think, very close to where I grew up, the East Bay. And he was talking about how he fell asleep in his truck. And he does remember how he got back there. And that, to me, was like that moment when I was in the field. And I was like, wow, that's unique. You know, they were looking for him. You know, how did that happen? How do you wake up hours later in the same spot? But, you know, you know, things like that. So I do really appreciate listening to you and listening to the listeners that you have on your show.
That's good to hear. I mean, they're just everyday people, you know. I mean, the stuff you watch on TV is TV, it's entertainment, you know, but the guests we have on this show are just normal people which have unusual experiences.
Yeah, that's true. And that's kind of a refreshing thing to hear, you know, because, you know, I think about it, I think, well, you know, I've had a good job, I've gone to school, you know, I've have a really consistent schedule, and, you know, I... By all accounts, I'm a normal human being, you know, by all my friends and family, you know, but these little events that I choose not to share so often, you know, or I'm very limited to sharing with because I'm afraid of potential ridicule or potential the turning of the heads, like, oh, you're not all there. But, you know, it's funny because, you know, I think I'm like, well, if I wasn't, you know, I probably wouldn't be in the position that I'm in right now in my life, which is really good. So I don't know.
Well, generally those people, they're generally people which haven't experienced anything, you know, so ridiculing others, you know, there's no benefit to that. And the guests, you know, sometimes they do use an alias because of their job.
Mm-hmm.
And we have all types of people on here. There's some very important people in very important jobs. So,
exactly.
People's names and what they do, that's not important, you know, it's the experience, which is the important thing.
Well, thank you for having me on your show. I truly appreciate your time and energy.
Oh, you didn't mention about Shana breaking the toilet one night. It made me laugh.
Gosh. Well, you know, we were in New Mexico at this point. And this woman, like I said, she was, you know, and I am somebody who will never body shame somebody. I think that... but when you're someone of bad character, you know, you're making it a little easy. And I think that for her, you know, she had gotten up one night, to go use the restroom, and, you know, we were on a pullout couch, and she was in there for a little bit. And then all of a sudden we hear this loud crash, and, you know, we come running over there, and she's telling us to get out, you know, cause she doesn't want to. She doesn't want us to see her bare butt. And we just were laughing, and she was so mad. And, you know, we were giggling, you know, we ran back to the bed pretty quickly because we were terrified of this woman. And she was very physically abusive towards my sister, not so much me. You know, she had tried at some point, but, you know, my mom was a very scary woman or individual herself and didn't want to test the waters there. But I think that, God, oh man, that was some type of a victory. You know, especially for my sister, because this woman, you know, she was just a tyrant. And I think that for me, that is the other memory that really holds dear to me in that moment is her sitting on this person who was allowing us to stay in her home. And she goes to use the toilet and she flatlines it. So, you know, it was pretty ridiculous. But yeah, I've never seen such a thing, and I hope never to see such a thing again. But that was crazy.
it did make me laugh. And what I like about a lot of these stories I have on here is people which build a bit of background around it as well. Instead of just, oh, I saw a light in the sky, you know, people have like a setting around the whole experience. And I like that. And I think that makes things a lot more relatable to people as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think so too. You know, I love hearing, you know, everybody's background and their stories and where they're coming from and what point they've come to in their lives at this juncture. Because, you know, I think we're all in this plane of life to figure out what the true meaning is. And, you know, we're talking about all the things that are happening in the world right now. And I think that maybe this is in some ways an awakening, you know, and I think that hopefully... our conscience is evolving, you know, and it always comes with a lot of resistance. I mean, it's with anything that we learn. I think that there's always going to be people who want to resist the idea of evolving because they're afraid, you know, and I just don't want to be afraid anymore.
Well, it's been wonderful talking to you today, Ali.
Thank you so much, Nick. I really appreciate it.
That is all I have for you today. Keep those emails coming in with your encounters of the strange and unexplained at the usual address, ufochronicles@gmail.com. or on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. You can also check out our previous shows, the merchandise store, and at the very least, you can get yourself a free bumper sticker. Keep updated on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. A very special thank you to Ali for sharing with us tonight, and thank you for listening. I will be back next week with Kim and our final episode of 2020. I wish you all a wonderful Christmas holiday and spending time with your family to the best you can. Till next week, stay safe and keep watching the skies for Santa. Goodbye.